starting in Meshachachma, Parshas Mitzora, again, a few, sorry, it's a difficult parsha under any circumstances, you know, and just wanted to pick out a few little shtiklos in the Meshachachma, each one, I think, you know, very bite-sized, but very enjoyable. Take a look on page Reshu 10, at the bottom left, Meshach and the Takeda, the bottom paragraph there. We're talking about the various karbanos that the mitzvah would bring beyond Taharasa when he's purifying himself. And it says that the shach, the pasuk says in Perek Yudalid, pasuk Yud Gimel, the shach at the kezah, he shechts the kezah, the lamb, which is brought as an asham. He shechts the carbon asham in the same place where the carbon chatas and the carbon ola would be shechted in the holy place. Because the asham is considered just like the chatas to the kohen, its kodesh kodashim is considered to be the highest form of karbanas. Alright, let's just add a little bit of word over here in order to understand what the pasuk is talking about, and then we'll see that the Meshach Kafla brings out an interesting chiddush over here. If you say Pashas Eitz in the Kalman in the morning, right, like you're supposed to, that's the thing you say right before every Shmuel in the morning, right, every Shmuel is 5 minutes, you know, Eitz in the Kalman is 4.5 minutes. So if you say Pashas Eitz in the Kalman in the morning, so we know that, first of all, karbanos are divided into kashim, kashim, and kashim kalim. You know, very, very holy karbanos. Those include the ola, the chatas, and the asham. And kashim kalim, you know, secondary level karbanos, you know, like the shlamim, like the bechor, you know, like the pesach. You know, those karbanos are on a, relatively speaking, a lower level of kedusha. There are numerous differences in halacha between kashim kashim and kashim kalim. One is where the karbanos have to be shechted. Right? Kashim kashim are shechted batzafa. They're shechted on the northern side of the mizbeach, the northern side of the azar. Kashim kalim have no such restrictions. Right? So that, you know, just as a karbanos 101, you know, that's one of the differences between the different types, these two different madregos of karbanos. And in our pasuk, which describes the shechita of the asham, the pasuk says that the keves, the lamb that's going to be the asham, should be shechted in the same place where the chatos and the ola are shechted, right? Namely, batzafon, in the northern side of the mizbeach. Ki kachatos ha'asham hu lakoyin kodesh kodashim hu. Because the asham is just like the chatos, it's kodshe kodshe. Right? So just as the chatos, the kodshe kodshe, is shechted batzafon, is shechted on the northern side of the mizbeach, so too the asham as kodshe kodshe is also shechted on the northern side of the mizbeach. That's what the pasuk says, and again, it seems to be pretty straightforward, you know, and not much to comment, except for one word, lakohe. Right? And that's what intrigues the Meshach Chachma. The pasuk says the chatos is the asham is just like the chatos for the kohen, lakohe. Kodesh Kodashim Hu, it's Kodesh Kodashim. What do you mean, lack Kohen? Really, Kodesh Kodashim to the Kohen. Kodesh Kodashim, it meets the requirements, it's put in the category by the Torah of Kodesh Kodashim, and therefore, just like the Chathos, it shifts it back to Akhon. What's lack Kohen? For the Kohen. Not Kodesh Kodashim for the Kohen. Kodesh Kodashim. It's in a certain category. You know, there's two categories of Karbanos. It's in the Kodesh Kodashim column. What do you mean, lack Kohen? So, comes along Meshach Kafla with a very interesting chiddush based on this idea. Shuto Shom Nikra, right? The simple reading of the pasuk is as follows. The Ho'il B'hu Kulo Lack Kohen Ukmo Kodesh Kodashim. Since whatever is not burnt on the Mizbeach goes to the Kohanim, right? Again, let's just cast it over the walls of the Kabbalah. The Ola is totally burnt on the Mizbeach. The Shlomim is divided up. Part of it is burnt on the Mizbeach. Part of the skin goes to the Kohanim. The flesh goes to the Bailim, to the people who blow up the Karbon. That's the Karbon Shlomim. the chatas and the asham, the chalazim, you know, the fat, the burned on the mizbeach, but the everything else, the flesh and the skin and everything else, goes to the kohanim for their usage and their consumption. Right? So ho'il v'hukulo la'kalim, since the asham, like the chatas, goes entirely to the kohanim, meaning everything that's left over after the requisite part of the burnt on the mizbeach, it's considered that's what makes it kodshei kodshim. And that's why it has to be shechted on this northern side of the Mizbeach, the holiest side of the Mizbeach. Shemeha Mizbeach Zachu Avodov Hema HaKohanim. Because what gives the Kohanim the right to have the leftovers of the carbon after it was burnt on the, after the Chalazim, the fats were burnt on the Mizbeach? It's the fact that the Kohanim service the Mizbeach. They are the Avodim of the Mizbeach. In the words of Chazal, Mishulchan Kavala Gavala Kazafu, right? They receive their due portion from the table of the Ribbon Shalom, so to speak, the Mizbeach. Ashehema Shomer Mishnevita Mizbeach. The Kohanim watch over the Mizbeach. Therefore, that's why they're entitled to get something from the Mizbeach and to signify that, you know, the those items which are kashim kashim and are shechted basafon on the holiest side of the Mizbeach for these purposes are designated as such because the Kohen is the one who gets them. So right here, and we'll see, he's going to flesh this out in just a moment, the Meshech Chochma is making a very, very interesting statement. Ordinarily, what makes a carbon kashim kashim as opposed to kashim kalim? So if you would have been fair, I would have just said, that's the way it is, right? In other words, there are two columns. There's some carbons which are holier, there's some carbons which are less holy. Why is that? That's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam decided. So says the Meshech Chochma, no, there's, again, you still have to understand this, but at least there's a yardstick in play. The factor which makes something kodshi kodshi as opposed to kodshi kalim is whether or not it's entirely belonging to Hashem. Something, a carbon which entirely belongs to Hashem is kodshei kodshim. A carbon which is eaten by the people who bring it is considered to be kodshim kalim. Aye, but a chatas and an asham are eaten by the Kohanim. They're not just totally consumed by Hashem. Yeah, but the Kohanim are eating it as servants of the Mizbeach. In other words, so to speak, the whole thing really goes to the Mizbeach, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, as a recognition of the role of the Kohanim in keeping the Mizbeach, allows the Kohanim to eat part of it, right? But what defines something as being kashim kashim as opposed to kashim kalim is the fact that it can only go either la Mizbeach entirely or la Mizbeach vilakoi. Right? Once you introduce the Bailim, once you introduce the Israelim into the picture, that already, that's the dividing line that moves something from being kashim kashim to being kashim kalim. So for instance, the carbon shlomim, which is eaten by the Israelim, by the Bailim, that's kashim kalim. The carbon tetzach, that's kashim kalim. Anything is the shlomim, it's the kashim kalim, right? Anything that has a tzad, which is eaten by someone who is not the Mizbeach or the Kohen, right? That's the factor that makes it kashim kalim. So Mimela says the Meshech Chochma, that's pshat and pasuk. Why is the asham considered to be kashim kashim like the chatos? Because lakaway, it goes, you know, besides the mizbeach, which every, you know, every carbon has a sad mizbeach, the chatos, the whatever is left over from the mizbeach of the asham goes exclusively lakaway, and that's the factor which makes it kashim kashim as opposed to being kashim kalim. So in this one word, the pasuk has explained what the criteria is. Why are certain things kashim kashim? Why are certain things kashim kalim? Right? It's the role, who gets to eat it. Once, you know, regular Jews are eating it, it's kashim kalim. Kashim kashim, holiest of holies means it goes only to God, or to God's servants who are given the opportunity, you know, to have something of the carbon to acknowledge their role in taking care of the Mizbeach.
I think Rashi says that there needs to be chalav by this after you saw Kayin. Rashi says it.
Yeah.
He says chalav by this after you saw Kayin.
But for that, that's not talking about the what Rashi is saying is that whatever avoda is done with the korban chatos, the same avoda is done with the asham. But that's not talking about the achila. In other words, the Meshachachna says that lakohen means that just as chatos only has achila kohen, so to asham only has achila kohen, and that's what makes the kashim kashim as opposed to kashim kohen.
Is there a distinction between the actions of the various rewards?
That I don't think so. Yeah.
Right.
I don't think so. Yeah. Whatever the ashes are, you know, they're disposed of in the same fashion. So that's part number one, right? The difference again, and it's very nogea for Ezra Makom every morning at the very least. The difference between Kashim Kashim and Kashim Kalim is the difference as to whether, you know, Yisraelim are able to eat it. And that now explains the following interesting halacha, which says, so we'll see there, Gam Kibse Aseret Shehim Kulon Lakoe Mokom Shkitosan Batsofon. Right? So he says as follows, and this again we see in Ezra Makom. Generally speaking, Shlomim Kodshim Kalim. Right? That's what we say in the science every morning. Shlomim Kodshim Kalim. Shritasam the Komako Barzara. Shlomim are Kodshim Kalim. They can be shafted anywhere in the Azara, anywhere in the courtyard. They don't have to be Davka Batsofa, Davka in the north. And now we're explaining what makes them Kodshim Kalim. The fact that the Bailim, the Yisraelim, are able to eat from them. However, there is one example of Shlomim, which are Kodshe Kodshim, and that we also find in the Mishnayot. Zivche Shalmei Tzibur Ba'ashama. An example of Kodshe Kodshim is Zivche Shalmei Tzibur. There are certain Shlomim which are brought not by an individual, but brought on behalf of the Tzibur. What are those Shlomim? The Kibsei Aseret. On Shavuot, there were lambs that were brought as a carbon shlomim, not on behalf of an individual, but on behalf of the klal. Those shlomim, the shalmei tzibur, right, the collective shlomim, those are considered to be kodshe kodshim, and they have to be shafted davka batzofa. Now, who eats from those shalmei tzibur? Only the kohen. Right? So it says, right. In other words, there's no bialim to eat from it, right? In other words, only the Kohanim eat from the Shalmei Tzibur. So it says in the Shechachma, oh, okay, so why is that? Do you see everything lines up, right? What makes a karbon kashe kashim as opposed to kashim kalim? The lack of a Yisrael eating it. So that means that when you have a shlomim that meets those criteria, even though you ordinarily say, well, you know, shalmei yachid are considered to be kashe kalim, why is it that shalmei tzibur should be considered to be kashe kashim? Very simple. Shalmei yachid are eaten by the Yisrael. Shalmei tzibur are not eaten by the Yisrael. The portion is burned out of his back. The rest of it is eaten by the Kohanim. So mimeila, that makes it kashe kashim. So mimeila, that makes it nishchat atzofa. That makes it shafted in the north, you know, just like the halachas of kashe kashim. Right? And that, he explains it, and that happens to be the halacha. And then he says a little bit later on, towards the end of that paragraph, Shazat ha'am lefishi kashe kashim kulal akoe. Because the shalmei tzibur are considered, or only go to the Kohen, not go to any Yisraelim, Tishachin al Yerach HaMizbeach. That's why it has to be shafted on the northern side of the Mizbeach. But again, in this one little word, Lakohen, you know, the Meshachachma brings out, you know, just again, very, very basic, what is the difference between Kodshe Kodshim and Kodshim Kalim? And we see how that bears itself out within the world, the universe of Shlomim, the Shlomim that have a Yisrael component, are Kashim Kalim, the Shlomim that don't have a Yisrael component, are Kashi Kashim. Okay, so again, one little thing that hopefully helps us just in happening in the morning, understanding the
Dabbling. Imagine that there's no Kohanim.
You have to call in the Kohanim or Yeshiva Blossom. You won't have any problem disposing of all of the flesh. Okay, let's look a little bit further on. Page Reish Chof Gimel, the right hand column. Vindalhu de en yodo matzeges. right? The Perek Yudalit Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Again, we're still talking about the Karbanos brought by the Mitzora when he's being Mitzahir, when he's purifying himself. So the Pasuk says, the Imdalhu, if he's poor, the Ein Yado Masegit, and his hand can't reach the amount of money that he needs to bring the animal Karbanos, which ordinarily he would be bringing for his kapara. He brings quite a bit of animals. He has to bring a kasot, an asham, and an olah, right? So here goes the pasuk and says, although he has to still bring a kebet for an asham, he still has to bring a lamb as an asham, nonetheless, he can bring a carbon, he can bring birds to be the chassis and the olah. Shnei tzorim, pasuk chavish, shnei tzorim, shnei b'nei yonah, so at least two out of the karbanos, the chatas and the ola, he can downgrade from an animal to a bird, obviously much, much less expensive, and, you know, he can meet his obligations that way. The Shacham is bothered by two things over here, just again, the Lashon HaPasuk. Again, the tremendous sensitivity that he had to the Lashon HaPasuk. What's the difference between Imdalhu, the Ein Yado Masegis? If he's poor, and he can't afford it. Well, yeah. If he's poor, he can't afford it. The Chumash could have used one of those phrases and still conveyed the same thing. The Imdalhu, okay, if he's poor, right? Or the Ein Yado Masegis, if he can't afford it, you know, then this is the halacha, right? What's the Imdalhu, the Ein Yado Masegis? It seems, you know, considering that in the Torah every single letter is of, you know, of incredible importance, this seems overly wordy for the Mahalakh of the Torah.
But I think there's a difference. If you poor, he has access to other people, and the other one says he has no access to other people.
Okay, so we'll see the Meshach Chacham is going to go mamish in that direction. You know, that being Tao, and we'll see, being Tao and not having means are not necessarily the same thing.
I was going to say that the people are poor, but they always manage.
It's great to together. Dal and Ein Yado Masegis don't necessarily mean exactly the same thing. There's your own funds and there's the ability of others to help you out. And again, he's going to explain this really in a very, very beautiful way from a grammatical perspective. The second thing which bothers him, again, a related question, if you look back at Vayikra Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Aleph, where we're talking about the chatos that a person would bring under certain circumstances, we know there's a concept called chatos Ole V'yore, the chatos which goes up and down, meaning, you know, what he brings depends on his financial means. So there, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, we read that the im lo tafzig yado l'shtei tzorim, right, if he can't afford, let's go back a little bit before that, Perek Hei, Pasuk Zayin, im lo tafzig yado dei seh, if his hand doesn't reach, if he doesn't have the means to bring a lamb as a chatos, so then he bring as a chatos. So then he brings birds, and then Pasuk Yud Aleph. If he can't afford to bring birds, then he should bring just a carbon limchot, you know, just a flower offering. There, the phrase which is used in is lo tzatzik yodo, right? The equivalent of ein yodo masegas. His hand can't reach, he doesn't have the means to provide in this particular way. What happened to the lashon of doubt? Right? How come it's only with regard to the mitzvah that the phrase v'imdalhu, you know, if he's poor, is mentioned, right? Whereas by the chasov, the lashon is just the second lashon, ein yodo masegas. He doesn't have the wherewithal to, you know, to be able to provide. So both of these, you know, oddities, which again, I think most of us would just keep reading the Chumash and not really pay much attention to, but the Meshach Chacham picks up on both of the oddities and links together Diksuk and Halacha, you know, in a very beautiful way to explain the pasuk. Pirush Dao, in general, Nikra al shem shechoter. Dao in general means that he's lacking something. Dao is not a term which uniquely means that a person is poor, right? Dao is a more general term, which means that you're lacking. Now, in the case of the Dao in this case, we ordinarily translate that the Dao lacks money, right? That's what he's lacking. Right? Mekimi the offer Dao, right? In other words, the person who's lifted up from the Dao because he's a Dao, right? We would say that, you know, what does it mean? He lacks money. Okay. But you could be a Dao and lack other things. Kamo Choser Bosa. Right? For instance, and here he refers to the dreams of Paro, that Paro, you know, tells to Yosef back in Parshas Mikre. Paro describes how he saw the seven cows that were Dalos Veros, right? They were bad and they were Dal. Now, Paro doesn't mean to say, I saw these cows and, you know, they didn't have cash. You know, they were standing on the side of the road, you know, hey, brother. You know, could you spare a dime, right? You know, that's not what Paro saw. Paro saw they were emaciated, right? But the term that the Chumash uses is dalos, right? Because they were lacking. In this case, they were lacking flesh. You know, they were lacking mamashos, right? They weren't as active as we'd like a good cow to be, right? But, you know, the term again is used as dal, right? So, dal could mean lacking money. It could mean lacking substance. Right? Or, oh, chaser reyim ve'olavim. Dao could also mean that you're lacking friends. Right? A person who has all the money in the world but has no friends could be appropriately called a dao, says the Meshechach. Again, the dao just means you lack something. Uvikfilut hu ever meduldo. Kmo miorok, yirak rak. Now we find something interesting in Hebrew, says the Meshechachma. When you want to say something is very X, the way you do it in Hebrew is you double the shorish. Right? How? So lamashal. Right? Yorok means green. Yirak rak, right? Double green means really green. Right? We had that in this week's parsha. V'hoyo hanega, yirak rak, o adam do. Right? The appearance of the tzaraas is yirak rak o adam dom, literally green or red, but you know it should say yorok o adam. Why does it say yirak rak o adam dom? Because yirak rak, double yorok, means really green. Adam dom means really red. Mimelo, says he, we find a concept in Chazal called Eber HaMeduldo. What's Eber HaMeduldo? It means a limb which is hanging by a thread from the body, right? Either in a person or in an animal. Okay, so how about this? You know, to what extent do we say that the limb, which is hanging by a thread from the body, isn't considered to be still attached? Maybe it is attached, maybe not attached, hanging by a thread, you know? Why is it called Eber HaMeduldo? Right? Meduldo is usually translated as dangling, right? But, you know, why is Meduldo mean dangling? So he says very beautifully. He says, what's Meduldo? Double doll. Double dal, right? Midul dal, right? So dal means lacking. Midul dal means it's really lacking. It's lacking a body. You know, the aver normally is connected to a limb. Is normally connected to something. Here, the aver is very, very lacking in a body. I mean, it's hanging by a thread. You know, I guess. So, you know, why doesn't midul dal mean that it's totally detached? I guess at that point it wouldn't even be considered to be an aver anymore, right? It's a separate thing by itself. Aver, limb, implies that it's attached to some greater whole, some greater entity. Here, it's an aver hamidul dal. It's a limb, but just barely. It's mamish, lacking immensely, and hence the double lashon midul dal, right? Okay, so first of all, we should establish over here that dao means you don't have friends. So let's just read that into the pasuk, and then we'll go back and see why that's significant. So in our parsha, in Mitzora, in daohu, ve'ein yodo maseges, if he is friendless and penniless, then he can bring a lower version, a cheaper version of the carbon of Tahara. Now, I understand that if he's penniless, you know, or if he's impoverished, he has to bring a cheaper version. Why does his lack of friends have anything to do with his having to bring a cheaper version? So he says as follows, right? People already start to answer this way, but he says it even stronger. Kol ha-karbon of zrichos das. When it comes to any carbon, you know, if I'm higher than a carbon, I can't have someone else volunteer to bring that carbon on my behalf without my knowledge, right? I mean, you know, Mashal Ma'adol V'Domer, right? They say that there's a certain method that people like to perform. You know, a guy goes into a restaurant and he sees a guy eating at the other table, calls over the waiter, and, you know, maitre d', whatever it is, and says, you know, let me pay for his meal. You know, let him get off scot-free. Right, the guy goes to pay for his meal, and you know, Baruch Hashem, he finds that his meal was paid for. Right, beautiful chesed. It's beautiful chesed, but it doesn't really work in the context of karbonos. So let's say a guy shows up one day in the Beit Hamikdash and it's chayiv chatos. Right, so he comes in, he presents his slip to the kohen at the door, and the kohen checks his master list and says, "Oh, Ploni Almoni, don't worry about it. Your neighbor took care of it. He brought the chatos for you." Right? It doesn't work. You know, if you're high of a carbon chatos, you have to bring a carbon chatos. Somebody else can't bring a carbon chatos on your behalf. However, when it comes to mechutzrei kapara, when it comes to certain types of people bringing carbonos called mechutzrei kapara, mechutzrei kapara means that the person was tamei, and they had to be metaher from their tzuma, and the final stage in alleviating the tzuma is to bring a carbon. Right? So one of the examples of mechutzrei kapara is the mitzora. Right? When it comes to another example, I'm going to wait and see later on in the parasha, a zava, right? In other words, different people who have bodily emissions of different sorts who become tamei, and then at the end of their tahara process have to bring a karbon as the final stage in their kapara. When it comes to mechutzrei kapara, that's the one example where somebody else can do you a taiva and bring a carbon on your behalf, even without your knowledge. Right? She'en am tzri chandas kadei lahach lo tzom the kodshim. Right? When it comes to mechutzrei kapara, you know, you can have a friend bring the carbon on your behalf, and then you're done. You know, the guy comes back and says, you know, I bought your birthday presents, I brought your carbon for you, and now, you know, you can go and eat carbono without any difficulty. So in other words, when it comes to a mitzvah, to a zav, or somebody like that who was tamei, and now needs to bring a carbon in order to enable them to eat carbonos once again. If you're a good neighbor, you know, you can go on your own, bring the carbon on his behalf, and it's done, right? It doesn't require the das, you know, the consent or even the knowledge of the person to bring the carbon. I mean, I don't know whether this disease will happen exactly when Mashiach comes, but when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, this would be a great kiruv tool. Right? In other words, you know, again, I don't know if we'll need kiruv at that point. Hopefully everyone will be makuruv, just by virtue of the Beit HaMikdash, right? But in other words, if you have a non-frum neighbor who needs, you know, z'mechutz kapara, you know, you could go and bring a karbon on their behalf and enable them to eat karbonos again, even without their active participation. Yeah. We'll see how it brings it back into the topic in a minute. So you should just be aware, he said, that mechutzrei kapara, someone else can bring the carbon on your behalf. The chatos ma'akvo milecho b'kodshim. Right. However, when it comes to a carbon chatos, which is brought over here, that's necessary for him to eat the kodshim. Machain the carbon all of the yard talk shame das. Machain in Yahvish Akher talk shame daito she is ratula the aim or lonichole the kapar the kabre. She ain't a lot to handle for shalakarin. Avo the mitzola she ain't sort of daito. The yachol of yachel of carbono. Machain cost of bin dalu nifo mechadelo. The aim of ach the rea she yachush also look of kaparo. The lot of sig your doll. Shame of the Melahavi, Lachain Zachule. Says the Meshachot Mitzvahot, what shot in our part of compassion system? In Dalhu, the Ein Yadu Maseget, if he's friendless and doesn't have enough money, so then he can bring a cheaper carbon. Why is he friendless? Because if he had friends, even if he didn't have money, his friends could go and bring the carbon for him. That would be the best solution. A guy doesn't have money, he's a mitzvah, and he goes to his friends and says, you know, I'd love to bring a carbon to allow me to eat carbonos again, but what can I do? I don't make any money. The yeshiva hasn't paid me for, you know, 20 months already, and I'm behind on everything. Right? So he goes to his friends, and his friends say, okay, Nachmanus, you know, or he doesn't even go to his friends. His friends just get together and they say, you know, I'm Yanko, you know, he really needs the kapara. So we'll go, we'll chip it together, we'll buy him a card, we'll go bring it out to him, and then we'll send him a little Hallmark card, you know, that says, you know, we were thinking of you, brought a carbon, you know, on your behalf, right? So the guy really has two answers, right? He could have a friend bring a carbon, or he could scrape together a carbon himself. But here in the pasuk, neither is an option. Da'alhu, he's friendless. So there's nobody bring a carbon on his behalf instead of him. The ein yado maseket, and secondly, he doesn't have any money of his own, so he can't afford to bring the carbon himself. So then he's really stuck. So then, that's the topic, there's the nature that he can bring the cheaper version of the carbon, where he brings outsides, where he brings birds, instead of bringing animals. Aye. So how come back in the parasha of Chatzot, at the end of Parshas Vayikra, it doesn't talk about if he's a dal. It only says, Ein yado maseket, Ein yado maseket, he lost a big yado, he doesn't have enough money. Because having friends wouldn't help over there. Because the friend can't bring a concept on your behalf. Right? So the only way that you could be eligible to bring it, you know, if you're not able to afford, a full-fledged concept, so, you know, it's all up to you. Then you get knocked down to a lower level and bring either Ophos or a Mincha. But the option of somebody else bringing Karban on your behalf, that's never an option by a Karban Chassid. There you need the Das. You need the person himself to be able to acquiesce to such a thing. And the guy may say, I don't want you to bring a Chassid on my behalf. I want to bring the Karban myself to gain, you know, the Kapara on my own. Right?
What happens if they gave a gift to them?
Anyway, they gave him money. That's money, essentially, right? So, yeah, so look, you can give somebody money, they can give him stock, right? So, again, on some level, being downloaded in the other month, I guess means if he doesn't have friends to help, like you said before, if he doesn't have friends to help him out by giving him money, right? I think Meshach Hoffman is learning, any other Masekas means he doesn't have access to funds in any way. You know, his job is lousy, he doesn't pay him any money, his friends don't give him any money, he can't even snort to get money, right? That's all focused on money. The Inshallah is the second thing. Inshallah means, forget about him getting money. Maybe his friends will do him a favor, just bring the carbon stam on his bear. Right? So that's only an option by Mitzvah, by Mechutz Kippurim. It's not an option by the Karban Chassid. So therefore, the Lashon of Indahu, if he's friendless, is mentioned over here. It's not mentioned over there. What part of the Mitzvah to take away from here, by the way? Right? So, there is, you know, just again, it's a Mitzvah board, but poverty can mean to not have money. Poverty can also be described as not having friends. Right? I mean, according to the Meshech Chachmah, very, very beautiful word, a guy who is friendless is called a dal, the same way that a guy who is penniless is called a dal. Right? There's an equivalence, you know, between, if you're chaser, you could be chaser money, you could be chaser friends. We can declare which one is worse. Right? Maybe having not having friends is worse than not having money. At least you have friends, you know, they can help you out and support you in some way.
Yeah,
right?
You have friends.
You have money, you have acquaintances. Right? You know, you don't get friends from money. You get acquaintances from money. You get well wishers from money. But your friends, you don't. Right? Right? Yeah.
Why
would
you
It is a form of a chassid. I mean, after all, I think it's a chassid and an asham. But it's not directly related to the sin in the following sense. The whole purpose of this karbon is allow him to eat karbonos again. He's already tahor for those purposes. He was mitahir from his tumah. Right? So, you know, true, there's a kind of secondary connection between his sarab and, you know, his kapara and his sinning, but it's a little less direct than the cases in Parshas Vayikra, where the person, I sin, and therefore I have to bring a karbon. You know, it's, you know, here it's a little bit more roundabout. I sinned, so I became tamei, and now to get rid of the last stage of the tumah, which prevents me from being able to eat karbanos, I have to bring this karbon chatos. It's a little bit less directly related. So, in that sense, the halacha is that, you know, someone else can bring on his behalf. Yeah, I mean, I hear that, but I mean, Lamaisa, the halacha is that, you know, the Mechut the Kippur can have someone else ring on his behalf. The Chassid and the Ola get knocked down to Ofa. I think there's three Kabbalahs here, the Chassid and Ola and Asham. The Asham stays an animal. Right, the Asham is an animal, even when the Chassid. Right. And so that's a little more difficult to do with Ophos. You know, it's not so much blood to, you know, to have altogether, right? But the Asham remains an animal. The Chassid and the Ola, you know, they get knocked down to being Ola. Right, but it's Chassid to Ola and Ola to Ola. Right, we don't have a concept of Asham to Ola. You know, there is no such concept in Halacha. Let's just skip forward a little bit to page Reish Chaf Hey. And in the beginning of Perek Ketzvav, when the Torah transitions from the laws of Saras to other laws of Tumah, the laws of Azot and Zava, again, people who have various bodily emissions, which make them Tomei. So the Pasuk says, "Vaydaber Hashem Amosha v'Yalarim Eimar, Dabru el Bnei Yisrael v'Amartem Aleihem. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, Ish Tiyeh Zov V'Tesoro Zovo Tomehu. When a person has a discharge from his body, the discharge is going to be Tomeh. Right? The Meshech Chochma points out something which, again, just speaking personally, I would have never noticed on my own. But if you contrast that for a moment, if you just hold the place and you turn back to the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, also in Vayikra, where the laws of Tzaraas are introduced, there also, by Dabar Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron leimor, Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron saying, Adam, kiyad or b'saro seifu sapachat of Aharis. When a man has an affliction on his skin, these are the laws. The familiar phrase, Dabar el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, which introduces so many halachas in Chumash, right? I mean, you should think about it. That's the common phrase, like Dabar Hashem Moshe Leimor, Dabar el b'nei Yisrael, right? That phrase, which does introduce the laws of Sifa, right, of the person, the man or the woman who has some kind of discharge, that phrase is, interestingly enough, absent from the introduction to the laws of Saras. So again, I read this however many years. It was absent. So what, right? No, that's not an answer to the Meshech Chochma. So there, page Reish Chaf Hey, the second paragraph on the top of the page on the right. Dabruel b'nei Yisrael v'amartem aleihem. Mazeh b'tzorat loksiv kein Dabruel b'nei Yisrael. So why Kafka doesn't it say in introducing the laws of Tzorat, Dabruel b'nei Yisrael, or something of that nature, right? Why is it only said by Ziva, you know, and not by Tzorat? He's talking, maybe it's for the following reason. Yishum da'azov u'meshuach v'chut l'shnei machanos. The halacha is, you know, the prophet is going to tell us later on, Bamidbar, Vishalchu min ha-machane, kol tzorua, v'chol zav, v'chol tomei lo nefesh, right? A mitzorua, a zav, and a person whose tomei came into contact with the dead body should be sent out of the machane. And Rashi over there comments that the shiluach machane for the tzorua is different than what it is for the zav. Is what is different, and the difference from the Tomei Lo Nefesh. There were three machanos in Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, the machane Shechina, right, the machane of the Mishkan itself, then around the machane Shechina, the concentric circle, was the machane Leviya, right, the machane of the Leviyim, that was corresponded to the Harabayus, right, in the later on in the Beit HaMikdash, and then the machane Yisrael, the rest of the Jewish people, was the third concentric circle, the Metzora was sent out of all three camps, right, which again, in later day terms, meant that he was sent outside of the walls of Yerushalayim, right? In other words, he was sent outside of the walls of the city. The Metzora was Mishtaleach, Chutz L'Gimel Machanot, he was sent all the way out to the periphery of the camps altogether. The Zav was sent out of the Machane Levia, right? He was excluded from two camps, but could still be in the Machane Yisrael if you were a Zav, or a Zava for that matter. You didn't have to be sent all the way out of the camp entirely. You didn't have to leave Yerushalayim. You just had to stay off of the Harabayim. And the Tomei Lanefesh, right, just had to stay out of the Mishkan proper, the Machane Shechina, right? So he says as follows. Ma'avit Barak books this came to Avro B'nai Yisrael Yitah Ben Mishum Dahavav Mishulach Chus L'Shnei Machanos But Adayin Hu B'Macha Neshlishis Macha Nei Yisrael L'Chein Oma Adizav El B'nai Yisrael. Right? In our Pasha which talks about the laws of Azav, the Zav himself is still part of the Macha Nei Yisrael. He's sent out of two camps, but he's still in the third camp. So Mimela Davru el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Zavim and Zavos, right, for whom these halachos are directly relevant, and they are called b'nei Yisrael because they are still part of the Machane Yisrael. Masha'en kein mitzvah shemishtaleh achuz b'gimel machanos, v'nitvah min haklau b'nei Yisrael, im kein eino b'chlau b'nei Yisrael, b'achu b'dod le'atzma. Right, says the Meshech Chochma, a Mitzora is sent all the way out of the three Machanos. So he's out of the camp. For the time that he's a Mitzora, he's not part of B'nai Yisrael. So it would not make sense to introduce the laws of Mitzora by saying, Davru el B'nai Yisrael, tell B'nai Yisrael about the laws of Tzorat, because the ones most affected by the laws of Tzorat, the Mitzorayim themselves, are not considered to be part of B'nai Yisrael for that, for the duration of their Tzoras. They are sent out of the three Machanos. Now, of course, you can say, look, but the laws of Tzoras pertain secondarily, you know, to the people, I mean, you know, everyone else has to know about the Tumah, be aware of it. Yeah, I'm sure the Meshech Chochma knows that as well, right? But, in other words, the primary audience of these halachas are the Mitzorayim themselves. The primary audience of the halachas of Zavim and Zavos are the Zavim and Zavos themselves. The Zavim and Zavos can be referred to as Davro B'nai Yisrael. Speak to Klal Yisrael, you know, and tell them about these laws. But the point which is being made is when a person is a Mitzorah, he's not even addressed as being part of B'nai Yisrael. So the laws of Tzoras don't open up with that familiar phrase, Davro B'nai Yisrael, because the primary audience of those halachas have actually been sent out of B'nai Yisrael as a whole. Right? Now, the Chiddush of the Meshech Chochma, again, first of all, it's just such a fascinating attention to language over here. Again, I can't speak for anyone else here, but, you know, I've read those sukkim many, many times. It never struck me that, you know, there was any omission of Davro B'nai Yisrael, but if it did strike me, it certainly didn't strike me as significant. Okay, it is what it is. No, he builds a drasha on it. But there's also a fascinating hashkafa. Well, then, I would have said, the Mitzorah is sent out of three Machanos. Okay, so that's where you have to stay. It's more than that, says the Meshech Chochma. The symbolism of the Mitzorah being removed from the Gimel Machanos is that he's removed from Klal Yisrael. He is excluded. He is ostracized in the ultimate sense of the word. It's not just physically sent him out of the camps. It's existentially sent him out of the camp. For the time that he's a Mitzorah, he's not the Klal B'nai Yisrael. The term B'nai Yisrael doesn't apply to him. I mean, that's the Meshech Chochma sentence. Nifrad min haKlal B'nai Yisrael. In Cain, Eino b'Klal B'nai Yisrael. Right? The term B'nai Yisrael doesn't apply to him for the duration of the time that he's a Mitzorah. It's not just physical that he's outside of the three Machanos. It's his very identity. It's outside of the Gibel Machanos. Maybe that's partially why, because I'll say Mitzorah is Hashav Kement. Right? That a person of Mitzorah is considered like he's dead. Right? And not just for all the physical reasons. But if our spiritual chiyuv, our spiritual life, stems from the fact that we are plugged in and attached to Klal Yisrael, this guy is not. This guy who's a Mitzorah is not part of Klal Yisrael for the duration of his Tzoras. I mean, that's a shocking thing to say about somebody. I mean, he's a Jew, but he's not part of this appellation of the name itself and the duration of his Sarat. Take it one step further. What got him into this mess? His Lashon Hara, the other sins that he engaged in, right? Someone who speaks Lashon Hara engages in the other sins that are part of, you know, that are causes of the Tumah of Tzaraas, has removed himself from the Bnei Yisrael. That's very scary stuff. Right? It puts a whole new dimension on the role and the fact that a person is a mitzvah, the fact that not only are they physically removed, but, you know, in terms of their identity as far as bodies are, has been stripped from them, from the duration, for the duration of the time, that they are mitzvah. Of course, the Meshech Chacham concludes with one word, upashut. And, you know, this is obvious. Slow. Okay, it's obvious there, right? But to us, it's a tremendous thing. Yeah, I mean, anyone who's stricken with Sarat, right? Which, again, you know, I'll not, Tehi Kameis, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, Davos to the Dalai Shalom, they should not be like someone who's dead. Yeah, I mean, now you appreciate it, right? It's very not a deal. It's excluded from the name itself in the duration of time she has to start out. Wow! You know, that's shocking.
Is this equivalent to a social outcast
now?
A total social outcast?
Well, it goes further than a social outcast. No, the fact that they're socially ostracized, okay, that we know, right? But it's more than that. Their identity, even Klavi Shemayim, is being stripped from them. The Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not part of Bnei Yisrael. You can't say Dagro Bnei Yisrael with regard to Mitzarayim, because Mitzarayim are not part of Bnei Yisrael. That's Akira Kach. You know, that's the... I would say this on my own, but the Meshech Chacham says it. You know, that's how far removed the Mitzora is from the Klal. The guy that was deaf was in an Eir Miklat and considered part by Yisrael L'chol Dover. It's just, you know, you know, you probably shouldn't invest in train tickets, you know, but, you know, his mobility is a little bit limited. But, you know, other than that, I mean, he can, you know, if he's a Rebbe, you know, the Talmud can go with him, he opens the yeshiva in the Eir Miklat, you know, he can have a nice test of time. What's that? The Rebbe goes with the Talmud. I mean, you know, they have, you know, they can have the geschmack of time in the Eir Miklat, you know. Well, the murderer is Vishalkeg, right? The guy who speaks Lashon Hara is, and that's the lesson. The guy who speaks Lashon Hara, the Mesid, is really removing himself from Klal Yisrael. Wow. I mean, that really it brings it home in an unbelievable way. Well, be careful what you say. Yeah, but, you know, right. But, I mean, the starkness of it certainly was something.
Well, we have one attitude, we have Lashon
Hara. Right. We have the sin, we just don't have the onus.
So, the karma then fulfills the process of tshuva, or just is it just step one
in the process of tshuva? The tshuva is separate. You know, the karma can't take the place of the tshuva. The karma has a technical role. The karma allows this person to start eating karbonis again after the tshuva of Sarat has come to an end.
That's all very nice, but the rabbi just told us that you're outside the camp, so to speak, and the door is probably closed.
Right.
So how do you get back?
No, but there's a tahara process. Right. In other words, the Kohen comes, he sees you, you know, and you know, you can become a Torah.
That's physical,
right. So, I mean, presumably, if the Torah doesn't describe, but presumably, this would impose upon the sinner an immense regimen of tshuva, which hopefully he would undertake, which would then lead to his physical symptoms clearing up. Nishkin Poshut, right? One last beautiful idea from the Meshech Chachma towards the end of the Parsha. I'm sorry. Right. We started off with the guy Gadal, and now he's outside of Bnei Yisrael. But now, I'd like to finish. What's that?
Right.
Well, basically, he has no friends, so he starts a blog. And that's how he spreads the biggest amount of Lashon Hara, right? That's how it works. Well, I hope nobody gets a hold of this tape on the internet. You know, I'll be in a lot of trouble. Reish Chavtes, you know, we talked about socially ostracizing the person, and Dali doesn't offend. Let's end on a note of reconciliation. Beautiful voice that he says in Reish Chavtes, the bottom right hand column. Like, this is the pasuk at the very, very end of the parasha of Perek Tetzvah, pasuk Lamed, it's a Lamed Aleph. You should separate the Jewish people from their tumah. They should not die as a result of their tumah. When they defile my mishkan, which is amongst them. What does that mean? So Pashut Pshat is explained by Rashi. You should go beat the Jewish people over the head with all these laws of Tumah, tell them very, very well, very, very strongly about these laws of Tumah Vatara, because the last thing you want is the guy becoming Tameh and going into the Mishkan and making the Mishkan Tameh, and if they go into the Mishkan while they're Tameh, they're going to be kind of mitzvah, they're going to be subject to the death penalty. So, below your Musul, the Tumah from the Tameh, the Mishkan, Yashir, the Tzalkom, we don't want that to happen, says the Rebbe Shalom. Why should watch the guy die? Right? So, you know, tell him the laws of Tumah Vatara so that he doesn't make a stupid mistake and go into the Mishkan while he's Tameh and bring a Chiyuv Mitzvah, bring a death penalty, capital penalty upon himself. That's the Pashut Pshat. Now, Chazal and Masechta need to learn out a very practical halacha from this Pasuk. And some, according to some poskim, this halacha is actually a din d'oraita based on the fact that it's from the Pasuk. We don't help us neither that the concept called Prisha Samos Lazesus, the concept of Zestos. We know it's a Chiyuv Karet for a man and a woman to be together when she's a Nidah, okay? But there's a din that when the man anticipates, or when the couple anticipates that the woman's going to become a Nidah, meaning they make a calculation and they figure out that if such and such a night, it seems likely that she's going to get her period, so the couple is supposed to be parish from one another, they're not supposed to be intimate with one another on that night, you know, until she can ascertain that, you know, the night passed, and she did not get her period. Most folks can understand that that's a din d'rabbana, right? Because that's not, she's not a mitzvah, right? She's not a, you know, when she's a mitzvah, they have to be parish with her, right? But she's not a mitzvah, we're just anticipating that she's going to become a mitzvah, right? However, there is, I think it's another Yehuda, right? There are those folks who say that it's a din d'rabbana. Why? Because the Gemara needs to learn that from this process. The Yizartim is the Neitzom Yitzumachtam. You should separate the Yizartim. It's not the Yizartim, not that you should admonish them, but the Yizartim, the Russian Nazira, that's what Rashi was right, that Rashi writes, a Nazira El Prisha. You should separate the Jewish people from their Tumah, meaning, even before the Tumah comes, when you anticipate the Tumah Nidah coming, you should already tell the Jewish people, the couple, to separate and not be together, right? So that's the Meshach HaFa, right? So Aseisha B'Nidah, with those Samos L'Vesta, right? You know, Aseisha Samos L'Vesta, you know, when they anticipate the period coming, they should already, you know, not be intimate together. The problem is, what do you do with the rest of the Pasuk? Right? They shouldn't die. The Talmud is Mishkan Yashir B'Selchem, when they defile my Mishkan, which is among them. How do you read that into the concept of Prisha Samos L'Vesta? So probably for that reason, that's why most folks can say, when Chazal explained the Pasuk as referring to Prisha Samos L'Vesta, it's not really meant, you know, as a bona fide Dindar Raisa, it's a Dindar Abadam, which is loosely connected to the Pasuk, because again, you can't really read the Pasuk. You can't really read the Pasuk from beginning to end as talking about Nidra. So the Meshach Chachma, no, of course you can. And in this Pasuk is implicit the beautiful idea which we all know from Chazal, which is a description of the Jewish home. See, Al-Kizet Sarek Lefarish, if you're going to read the Pasuk as talking about Nidah and the relationship between husband and wife, then the second half of the Pasuk has to be explained as follows. When it says in the Pasuk, let them separate when she anticipates becoming a Nidah, and not be metame my Mishkan, which is in their midst, Al-Kizet Sarek Lefarish, if you're going to read the Pasuk as talking about very famous drasha from Chazal. All the Chassanim and Kalus know this drasha. Right? Ish v'isha zochu, when a man and woman are zochar, shechina b'neihem, the shechina is among them. Lo zochu, if they're not zochar, so they're consumed by fire. Okay, it's a beautiful chazal. When a woman and man build a home together, a bayis nevam b'yisrael, the shechina is there. How did Rabbi Akiva know that? Right, because Akiva is the one who makes the drasha in Gemara Sota. How did he know that? Beautiful drasha, works for Sheva Brachos, works for Uprus, you know, works. It's a beautiful idea, yeah, it gets everybody very excited, you know, a husband and wife, they come together, the Shechina is there. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. What's in the card for that? So that's the Meshachachman, it's our portrait. According to the Gemara, that means that when a man and woman are married, they have to be careful around the time she anticipates her period, not to be together, because Chas v'Shalom, if they are together, they will be metamei et mishkani asher b'solchom. They will defile my mishkan, which is among them. What does that mean in the context of a husband and wife? If it does not mean that in a normal marital relationship, when everything is going well, there is Mishkani Asher B'Sochem. God's Mishkan is present in the Jewish home between husband and wife. So when husband and wife, you know, are not careful with the laws of Taharas HaMishpacha, they will be Metame, the Mishkan, which is among them. But by implication, that's the negative form of it, by positive implication, if they build a Torah home which is predicated on Taharas HaMishpacha in every sense of the term, they will be Mekadesh, the Mishkan Asher B'Sochem. They will sanctify the Mishkan which is part of the house. Vizel B'Sochem, what does it mean B'Sochem in their midst? Bein Ish L'Ishto, between, you know, husband and wife. There is a Mishkan that's in every Jewish home. When the laws of Torah are properly applied in that home, the Shechina is able to dwell in the home. Rabbi Akiva got it from here, says the Meshech Chachma. This is the source of all those Sheva Brachos that come ultimately from this pasuk over here. So we started with Dal, the guy who doesn't have friends, the guy who's not part of today itself. Baruch Hashem, we ended on a note of reconciliation, and we brought the Shechina, you know, back into the Jewish home. I'm hoping that Hashem we can learn next week also. It's right before Pesach, you know, but we'll make time at the same time following Ma'ariv, you know, approximately now, 8:30-ish, and, you know, we'll meet then, Hashem.